Christopher was diagnosed at the age of 4 1/4 with what is called a metastatic medulloblastoma, which means that he had the same type of brain tumour as young Asher, and the metastatic means that it had already spread into his spine. We found out after quite a lot of battling to get a diagnosis. The day that we had a scan, we were whisked immediately to Tooting, to St George's Hospital, and 2 days later he was operated upon. There then followed many, many months of what was an extremely challenging time for us as a family. Many very challenging memories, thinking back to the period when he was immediately post-surgery, and then the subsequent months when he was treated with harsh chemotherapy treatments.
That moment comes from out of the blue, where one moment he doesn't have this thing, and next moment you're told, well, yes, he does. So starting to process that, finding out exactly what's going on there, and then being presented with perhaps a range of options. Did you feel that that was well explained? Did you quickly understand what was going on?
It's a very, very steep learning curve.
Yeah.
You go from 0 to 1,000,000 miles an hour in the space of 24 hours. No one can really describe your feelings, because you're just bombarded with information. You're worried about the outcome. It's a very, very stressful time. We were informed just after Christopher had his surgery that metastatic medulloblastoma did not have a good outcome at all, and that we must have faith in the oncologists at the Royal Marsden.
I think just adding to that as well, as a parent, the fact that your only child is being diagnosed with cancer, and to be told this is the path that lies ahead, a potential 6 months minimum of treatments in and out of hospital. And the times out of hospital are not times that most families would have any kind of understanding of. They were times where we as parents, the prime carers for our son, were having to administer chemotherapy drugs, anti-sickness drugs. We had set up a log of activities so that we could remember all the times where we were supposed to give him these drugs. It was stressful from the time of diagnosis until the time our son lost his battle.
Did you feel like you were doing the right thing at the time? Perhaps, is it a double-edged thing where you think, hang on, we're giving these very harsh drugs to him, but we're told, we're assured this is the right thing to do. Were you questioning yourselves then?
You don't really have chance to question yourselves, as you know that the treatments that you're offered are your only avenue. And without those treatments, you know that your child will die. So you don't really have much choice.
The choices that you have as what's called frontline treatment for a child with cancer, as we speak today, and as was the case with our son 8 years ago now, October the 23rd he was diagnosed, a date that we will never forget. The options are surgery, chemotherapy and radiotherapy, and those are the mainstream choices in this country if you want your child to survive the disease, or should I say, if you want to have a chance and to give them some hope, and to give yourself hope that your child might actually survive this cruel disease. If we move on to talking about chemotherapy, the drugs which are used to treat children in most of the protocols today have an average age of 50 years. They are all what is called off-label drugs. So we, as Christopher's parents, were asked in each instance when we were told this drug is part of the protocol to treat medulloblastoma, we were told about the potential side effects of that drug, and then we had a form pushed under our noses to sign, a consent form that we had understood the risks and that we were in agreement to our son being treated with those particular drugs. Now, we all talk about the short-term side effects. We, most of us know that children, or anybody in fact, loses hair when they're treated with chemotherapy. To be honest, I don't think a parent even notices that their child's lost their hair. There are so many other things that are going on that are much more critical and much more concerning than hair loss.
So what would you say Christopher's quality of life was during that time?
Extremely poor. We had to deal with incessant sickness. When he was on his harshest drugs, he had a thing called mucositis, which was basically where the chemotherapy drugs were affecting his stomach lining. And when he had his high dose chemotherapy, the pain was so bad that they actually had to administer morphine, and that's not really to address any pain from cancer, it's to address the pain of the treatments.
So chatting to you, Kevin and Karen here, you're giving the rest of us a very good insight into perhaps some of the questions that Asher King's parents were asking themselves about the treatment of their son as well. So is there another way? That this sounds, it sounds so brutal that the treatment that is given, which it, you've told me is the only way it can be treated in this country. Is there another way?
The people that we work with at the Institute of Cancer Research in Sutton believe there is another way, and the whole paediatric oncology research community believes there is another way, and it is down to personalised treatment for children with cancer. And when I say personalised treatment, what we do there is we actually analyse the genetic mutations in the tumour, and then we are able to actually give that child drugs that are specific to the biological issues that that child is facing.
And is that not more, what is that going to be more widely adopted? Is that in use in a number of places or not?
It is starting to be used in adults, but there is this huge misconception by everyone that we speak to that, you know, research on children must be way ahead of adults simply because they're children. They're our tomorrow. You know, it's not the truth. The truth is that adult research leads the way by many, many years over children. So what's coming into let's say, frontline service for adults today, 2014, will probably be available as a frontline treatment on current trends probably 2020 at the earliest.
And we don't believe that that's good enough. These children currently undergoing the treatments that they are, and even if we talk about radiotherapy or proton therapy, to my mind, I'm not a professional and I don't confess to being one, but I don't know any family whose child has been treated with radiotherapy or a proton therapy type treatment without having coupled with that chemotherapy as well. And as we've already hinted, there are massive, massive issues with chemotherapy.
Can I ask this of you both then, knowing what you know now, if you'd had this knowledge when Christopher was diagnosed on the 23rd of October 8 years ago, would you have taken a different course of action? What else could you have done?
Very little. There was no proton beam therapy available at that time. The centres that do have it in the world, we know that there's obviously one in Prague from the King publicity. Mm-hmm. We know that there is one in Germany. We know there are centres in the United States.
So if the eventual outcome was that, you know, very sadly you were going to lose Christopher, would you have rather had him at home with you, not being sick or having his stomach lining ruined, that sort of, would you have rather that than what actually happened?
Absolutely. To sit at the side of your child and see them actually bring up the inside of their stomach is not something that I think any parent should have to witness. Trying with everything that they have to save their child from cancer, we shouldn't have to be using treatments that have been around for over 50 years. It's like going back into cave times, and I would rather sit with my son in a wooden hut somewhere, but have treatments that are modern day treatments that are not going to cause all of these harsh side effects. And we haven't even talked about the potential damage if a child survives the cancer, of later cancers, of second cancers rather, in later life, of damage to their heart, to other organs. There are so many issues. Our son didn't have the chance to even live to have those other issues, and I'm not saying I would have wanted to him to have had them, but those are also in the back of parents' minds when their children survive these diseases, when they've been treated with chemotherapy and radiotherapy. So yes, we would have wanted something better.
Okay.
And the frustration is, it still isn't moving forward at a pace that we think is good enough and fast enough for our children. And that's one big reason why we're campaigning and fighting with everything we have to try and give these children a voice.
So is that the focus of your Christopher Smile charity now?
Yes, we are funding, we're currently funding researchers at the Institute of Cancer Research. Our focus at the moment is on molecular pathology. So we're actually trying to identify those genetic abnormalities in children's tumours, mm-hmm. and the actual genes that are mutated and that are, let's say, targets for new drugs. The issue that we have there is we could find all the targets, but then we need the drugs to address them.
I just wonder whether you would give us a kind of reaction to when Asher King's story was on the news, getting on for towards a couple of weeks ago now, the way you felt about the actions that his parents took at that time, because this was post-surgery, wasn't it? It was about 5 days after his surgery when they took him out of the hospital in Southampton. What did you make of their actions then?
For me, it was a case of another family facing the same sorts of decisions that we had to face 8 years ago. And for us, Asher King represents all of those families who are sitting in the centres around the UK, children's centres, which are bulging full of families facing the same choices that we had to face 8 years ago. And it's such a massive sense of frustration that this is still happening and we need to do more.
Danny, I think one thing we should remember, that even today, in 2014, there are children's cancers that are incurable. And that when children display some strange symptoms, and after finally getting accepted by a hospital for tests and a scan is done, for some parents, what they think is some strange illness, they are given the tragic news that their child not only has cancer, but their cancer cannot be cured. And in this day and age, with all the resources of the pharmaceutical industry, with all the technological resources in the world today, we are still facing that. And that situation occurs in the United States, it occurs in the UK, it occurs in Europe. And there needs to be a new initiative to actually tackle this disease. And it needs focus from all parties. Okay. It needs focus from the pharmaceuticals, from politicians, from academics. Everybody's got to get around the table. If they want to sort this out, they can. And we're more than happy to join that debate.